Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of December 4th, 2018. This is also our 35th episode, so we can technically run for president. We're very excited about this. So the lead for 2020, vote lead. There's going to be a lot of changes when we're in charge. This week, we catch you up to speed on the VC summer boondoggle. The Public Service Commission wrapped up 3 weeks of hearings on the failed $9 billion nuclear project and will soon determine how much SCE&G ratepayers are on the hook for and whether the utility can be sold to the Virginia-based Dominion Energy. Also want to remind you that we have our live taping in Charleston this Thursday at 6 p.m. We're going to be live at Munkle Brewing Company in Charleston, December 6th at 6 p.m. So come out, get a pint of beer with us, and enjoy the fellowship that is the South Carolina Lead. Also, be sure to wear your ugly Christmas sweater. I will have one on, so I don't want to be the only one wearing one. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections of the podcast instead of listening to Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You on repeat, or while you're trying to perfect your seasonal eggnog recipe. Here's a hint. Don't do it. Just buy the eggnog. You're already in debt. Just buy some more stuff. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. And number one, the McClatchy D.C. Bureau reports that South Carolina Senator Tim Scott said he will oppose the nomination of Thomas Farr to the federal bench, assuring that the controversial pick will not be confirmed this week. The South Carolina Republican will be the deciding vote in determining whether Farr, who is accused of efforts to disenfranchise black voters, would become a U.S. District Court judge in the Eastern District of North Carolina. The seat has been open since January 1st, 2006. Now, Scott's decision comes after days of intense drama and speculation about what the Senate's only black Republican would do. Number two, a minimally adequate series update. The Post and Courier reports that in the wake of its series illuminating the shortcomings of South Carolina's education system, that key state lawmakers are supportive of making changes next year. Representative Peter McCoy, a Charleston Republican who is poised to become the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, said the series gave lawmakers the wake-up call they needed to address chronic problems within the education system. Also, legislation to overhaul and simplify funding could make its way to the House floor soon after the new session starts on January 8th. This according to the House chief budget writer, Representative Brian White. Now, a panel has been working on that bill and is drawing from a recently completed school funding analysis that White requested from state economists last year. Number three, the Post and Courier reports that the only South Carolina lawmaker sentenced to prison in the Statehouse corruption probe will be able to stay free while appealing his conviction. Circuit Judge Carmen Mullen set bail at $250,000 for former House Judiciary Chairman Jim Harrison, who was sentenced to 18 months in prison after being convicted last month of perjury and two counts of misconduct in office. The order came a day before he was scheduled to report to prison last Friday. The Columbia Republican could have received a sentence of up to 21 years for secretly profiting from the influential Richard Quinn and Associates consulting firm that pleaded guilty to illegal lobbying earlier this year and then lying about it to a grand jury. And number four, speaking of breaking the law, WalletHub reported that Columbia is one of the country's most sinful cities, coming in at 30th place. The report compared more than 180 cities based on seven sinful behaviors. The highest sinful behavior that Columbia ranked in was fifth for excess and vice, which draws upon data dealing with obesity, drinking, DUI-related fatalities, smoking, marijuana use, and others. Now, Charleston ranked 55th, Charlotte ranked 58th, and Augusta rounded out the region in 71st place. So we're not alone out there, guys. And just like that, we buried the lead. Details of the failed $9 billion VC summer nuclear project and how much ratepayers should be paying for the boondoggle have been top issues for more than a year. Who knew what when, who's on the hook for that project, and for how much was argued before the Public Service Commission for 3 weeks this fall. In this saga's most recent chapter, the PSC will soon decide how much ratepayers will have to pay for the failed project, of which they've already spent $2 billion on. And will also decide whether to approve the $14.6 billion merger between Virginia-based Dominion Energy and SCE&G's parent company, SCANA. But more questions remain surrounding the future of SCNG, so we brought in the Post and Courier's Andy Brown, who followed those hearings closely to give us an update on this ongoing situation. Andy, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Has it really been just a year? It feels much longer.
Yes, we've been time traveling. And sorry we haven't had you on in a while. There's just been a couple other things going on, but we know.
Yeah, elections, whatever. Everybody should be involved in utility law and utility regulation. It's what makes the world go around.
We knew you'd still be here waiting for us, and we'd be waiting for you after all that dust settles. But just catch us up and tell us what happened during those hearings that you covered day in and day out. The PSC essentially serves as a court in these situations. What was important about this and what came out of those 3 weeks?
So this was the first time since the project was canceled that the public service commissioners, there's seven of them in South Carolina, had an opportunity to listen to testimony and review evidence about SCANA's handling of the VC Summer project over the past decade. You had SCANA and Dominion on one side of this courtroom, essentially, versus the ORS, which is the state utility watchdog
Office
agency.
Office of Regulatory Staff.
And a group of attorneys, including Bob Gowd, who represented the Sierra Club, and some other environmental groups, and AARP, which had an attorney representing essentially their retired members who are SCANA customers. The entire case was about when did SCANA begin, or did they begin, making improper decisions on this project. ORS was the primary group to push that, and they settled on a date in early 2015 in which they said this is whenever SCANA started misleading the Public Service Commission, the public, and its investors. Any money spent past that point shouldn't be collectible.
So that's something you have seen in emails before, but now this is something that's really on the record between ORS and out in the open, essentially saying that this is when you were still raising rates, but we know that you at the same time were kind of aware that things were not going the way they should have been going.
ORS in the past year has dredged up a bunch of evidence, emails and reports and analysis that the public and the regulators had never seen before. So what their theory was in this case and what they asked the public service commissioners to do is essentially say there were cost estimates and audits and all of these things that never came to light. And it was in the 2015 timeframe. And so they're saying whenever SCANA came in 2015 and asked to increase their budget again and asked to extend their schedule on this already troubled nuclear project, that's
rates.
Whenever the misinformation and misleading statements came out. And as a result, you guys should not allow them to charge customers moving forward for anything that they spent past 2015.
So the money that they already spent has been spent, but don't keep them on the hook for anything that is still related to this project. So is that enough? I mean, was that evidence seem like enough to kind of, I don't want to say sink their argument, but also, I mean, to kind of get this problem off the ratepayers' backs at this point, or is that to be determined?
I don't think it's arguable anymore. So what happened was Dominion and SCANA had been at a different point in saying, trying to argue, their attorneys did, that they should still be able to collect what they spent between 2015 and the project being canceled. By the end of the hearing, Dominion essentially submitted that it's fine. We'll do away with that money that SCANA spent after 2015. We'll essentially admit that we're not going to collect anything after that, but you guys should agree to this new deal that we're offering. And that would require essentially that Dominion collect around $2.3 billion over the next two decades from customers to pay for what SCANA spent prior to 2015.
So isn't that just kind of the same thing then? I mean, how is that different? Is it just a different – because it's part of a – instead of having – to refund their try and break it down for
us. I mean, so that there were billions, there was about $5 billion in costs that was attributable to SCANA's 55% of this project. Mm-hmm. And so what Dominion is saying and SCANA along with them is essentially, you guys can't prove that we did anything wrong prior to 2015. And so we still have billions of costs prior to that. The long story short here is customers, it seems, are going to be paying billions or likely to be paying billions for this failed project over the next 20 years.
Regardless.
Even if ORS gets its way, it's going to pay hundreds of millions of dollars, somewhere close to that as well. So for people who were hoping that they wouldn't pay anything for a failed project moving forward, that dream seems to be gone.
And it seems like people have kind of come to terms with that. Even some lawmakers have kind of come to terms with that, especially in light of this settlement that you just kind of referenced. So it's a deal between what Dominion and lawyers representing SCNG ratepayers dealing with that $2 billion that needs to be approved by a judge, essentially?
So, there was two sideshows. There was a sideshow going on as well, right? So there was the Public Service Commission, which was deciding what customers are going to pay for these reactors moving forward. And then there was a separate court case in state court that was essentially going to decide whether ratepayers get how much money they get back for the $2 billion they already poured into the project over the past decade. Mm-hmm. And SCANA also announced after Thanksgiving that they were settling that case with the trial attorneys who were pushing that case. What they're getting out of that is essentially $115 million in a settlement and whatever proceeds they can make from selling some SCANA properties. And so it's kind of an all-encompassing deal. That deal in the state court is contingent upon the PSC giving Dominion and SCANA what they want in the Public Service Commission.
So they're kind of almost forcing the PSC, in a sense, both this outside deal?
They're twisting their arm a little bit with this deal. And, you know, you have the trial attorneys who are getting part of this $115 million and the proceeds supporting them in this endeavor. You have, and kind of oddly enough, you have a twist in which House Speaker Jay Lucas is now on board with Dominion's latest rates that they're proposing in the Public Service Commission. Jay Lucas had been, well, at least the House had for almost half a year been pounding the table and essentially saying that ratepayers shouldn't have to pay anything moving forward and that rates should be zeroed out, and it's ridiculous that people should have to pay for a power project that won't produce any power. Well, Speaker Lucas is softly supporting now the deal in which Dominion would collect the $2.3 billion over the next two decades.
So lawmakers are saying we don't want these customers to keep paying for something like this, but now they're still going to keep paying for this, but the tune has changed a little bit from the lawmakers. So
the lawmakers passed earlier this year, if you remember, a temporary rate. And it dropped it so that I think it was at 5%, right? 5% of people's bills were going to this nuclear project instead of the 18% that it was prior. Dominion's new rates get close to where, right around where that temporary rate is at.
Okay.
And so the House Speaker has essentially said, we've already litigated that in federal court. It stood up to the test. You know, we won. Let's just go with that rate.
It's the best you're going to get at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, the messaging here, though, is going to be interesting because, you know, the House did for they held press conference after press conference.
They slammed the Senate over a lot of times.
Right. And told people, you know, you shouldn't have to pay anything for this thing. Well, now they're going to have to go back and people are going to have to be like, wait, I am going to pay something for this.
And but it's just that little percentage that we're kind of at right now is what you're saying, right?
Right. So we're going to be around again. It's around the temporary rate, which was, again, 5% of people's bills.
Which they saw in August take effect.
Right.
I mean, but this entire deal is also incumbent upon, you know, getting approval from a circuit court judge. And then, but ORS is not really on board with that deal. Is that correct?
ORS is still main. They don't want to settle this. They've been criticized by lawmakers for
being asleep at the switch. And now they're coming back trying to hit hard against it. And
right. So ORS have maintained since the beginning of this PSC case that they're going to go with this alternative rate that they pushed, and they're not too far off on essentially how much is still allowed to be collected, but ORS is pushing a different plan in which they handle the new federal tax cuts differently, which are play into what people are going to pay for these reactors, and the settlement that SCANA received from Toshiba, which was the parent company of Westinghouse. And they handle that money, that pot of money, differently and get essentially a lower amount that people will have to pay overall.
And then this, so we have the PSC hearing going on, we have this other settlement going on, and then there's also another court situation dealing with the Baseload Review Act, and there was talk about that potentially being ruled unconstitutional. That's a 2007 law that allowed SCNG to collect money from ratepayers, but you know, there was talk about that potentially getting rolled back, leaked by the judge, possibly that it could happen, but that decision has since chilled in
well, that's part of the settlement.
Yeah.
The settlement over the $115 million
is the case
that was pending, in which a judge was apparently considering deeming the Baseload Review Act unconstitutional. So that's off the table.
And that way it keeps them able to keep getting that money from ratepayers, essentially.
All of this goes back to 2007. The lawmakers passed a law at the behest of SCANA. Actually, SCANA's attorney, according to his online profile at one point, he helped write the law. And what it did is it allowed SCANA to charge people up front for the nuclear reactors as they were being built. And it also had a clause in there that said, if a project is abandoned, we still get to collect. This is South Carolina reaping what it sowed more than a decade ago. And lawmakers wrote this law, and now customers are paying the price for it.
So the only solace customers can have is that it's not going to be that full 18% but at a lower rate,
right,
like around what they're paying right now.
Right. It's a discount from what SCANA was asking for a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
They are still going to have to pay billions of dollars, likely, for this failed project.
And just kind of looking at the future, Andy, SCANA investors are also still suing SCANA over this, saying they've been misled. There's possible SEC investigations, the FBI is looking into this. Are we going to see that SCANA lawsuit going forward from the investors, as well as potential federal indictments coming down at some point? Do we know?
The civil suit that some of the institutional investors of SCANA filed in federal court, mm-hmm, is still pending. I assume that those attorneys are still waiting around to see what is filed criminally, whether the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Columbia files indictments and charges against the top executives of SCANA, because that would obviously better their case.
Mm-hmm.
The federal criminal investigation is not dead, to say the least.
Yep.
During the Public Service Commission hearings, an assistant U.S. attorney from Columbia sat in and listened to Jimmy Addison, SCANA's CEO, speak about the failed project. And the day after that, I incidentally sat down next to an FBI agent who was taking notes as Jimmy Addison continued to testify. So I think it's fair to say that they are still very interested to know what Jimmy Addison, former CEO Kevin Marsh, and former Vice President Steve Byrne knew and did during this project.
And the Dominion deal is still also being debated right now by PSC, and we're going to find out about that and the ruling overall with the ratepayers, what, in a month or so?
We're looking at December 21st. The Public Service Commission will announce how much customers pay for these reactors in the coming decades, and they will announce essentially the terms of that deal. And based on that, Dominion will say whether or not they continue to agree to take over SCANA Corporation.
So it's going to be either a good Christmas or a bad Christmas, depending on who you are. But I think the lawyers are going to have a good Christmas regardless, right?
There were so many lawyers in that meeting, and that's their jobs. I totally get that. But the number of billable hours that was going on in that PSC hearing was amazing. I mean, you had, I think SCANA and Dominion probably had 6 or 7 attorneys around the table. So a lot of legal power went into this.
Multiply that by an hourly rate and times 5, 3 weeks. So, yeah, a lot of things going on. And then I guess we'll find out about that, too. Yeah, I know this was your Super Bowl for those 3 weeks. And then I guess the 21st is going to be D-Day, essentially.
I don't know. You know, it'll get handed down, I'm sure, on, like, the last possible hour. And I'll be writing a story about how much customers will be paying at, like, 9 o'clock at night. But
yeah,
I'm looking forward to that.
And then, of course, session starts January 8th, and we'll see. I mean, we're not going to talk about Santee Cooper because we're about to wrap up, but just there's going to be a lot going on. I'm sure still dealing with this fallout when we get back in session.
Who knows what comes after this? I mean, the parties have the ability to challenge anything the PSC rules to the South Carolina Supreme Court. You know, depending on the outcome, you could see that happen.
Even though the 21st is going to be a big day to watch, there's still a lot more that could happen after that. So we'll be keeping up with you, Andy. Thank you for bringing us all those ins and outs of this intricate, complex boondoggle that we've been covering alongside with you. Thanks.
Thanks.
And we're back on the campaign trail with some insider Washington campaign trail bites for you this week. Several members of the South Carolina congressional delegation have snagged leadership positions. Democratic Representative Jim Clyburn was unopposed and unanimously elected majority whip. McClatchy's Emma Dumain reported that 1st Congressional District Democrat Joe Cunningham was elected as regional whip. This gives the freshman lawmaker from the Lowcountry a role in the new House leadership, which will have him working closer with majority whip Representative Jim Clyburn, South Carolina's other congressional Democrat. The Post and Courier's Jamie Lovegrove reported that 4th Congressional District Republican Representative William Timmons was elected as the freshman representative for the Republican Steering Committee. Now, this panel helps decide committee placements for all other Republican members on committees in Congress. And Dumain also reported that 2nd Congressional District Republican Joe Wilson, however, did not get elected as ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And earlier last week, Senator Lindsey Graham was back on the campaign trail, this time in Mississippi with President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence in support of Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith in that Senate runoff down there. Now, Hyde-Smith did defeat Democrat Mike Espy. And back in Columbia, the House will hold its organizational session this week on December 4th and 5th. This happens every 2 years following elections, and it's a time for lawmakers to kind of work through some housekeeping details, such as choosing their seats in the House chamber. But more importantly, they take up leadership votes for Speaker and on committees. So be sure to stay tuned for that. We'll have a recap of that soon. In our final section, Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with more great state trivia? Well, he is. So, Russ, let's get to it right now. Welcome back.
Okay, thanks.
What do we got?
Well, we figured we would. We haven't done anything in geography or geology in a while, so I figured maybe we would go back down that road and try to get some good ones here. So it's pretty simple. Any probably school child in South Carolina above the eighth or ninth grade will know this.
Oh man! Wow, loaded.
Mm-hmm. You know, what is the highest point in South Carolina? What is the highest mountain in South Carolina?
Climb every mountain.
Mm-hmm. A, Sassafras Mountain. B, Pinnacle Mountain. C, Caesar's Head. D, Hogback Mountain.
Oh, Jesus. Pinnacle's like the...
No help from the control room,
no,
by the
there's
way.
Definitely not. Sassafras, Pinnacle,
Caesar's Head. Hogback.
Jesus. Did you just like throw a dart at like the dictionary and say, oh, that sounds like a good...
No, I kind of knew it.
No, but these other names, I mean, my God, who came up with these names?
They're all very real.
They're all
mountains in South Carolina.
Okay, apologies to our listeners and special
apologies to your listeners in Pickens and Greenville counties.
Oh, Jesus. No. Well, I haven't gone hiking at all in South Carolina. Sassafras. I feel like I would know about Sassafras. It's kind of a sassy thing. I'll go with Hogback Mountain.
Hogback Mountain. That's pretty good. But the answer is A, Sassafras.
Holy moly!
Mountain.
I always got like the one foot in the door on these.
Its summit is 3,564 feet. It is located in northern Pickens County. You actually have to go into North Carolina by road to get back to the summit. And the State Department of Natural Resources is a little behind, but they're in the process of building what looks like it's going to be a really cool kind of observation tower on the top of Sassafras Mountain. Now, Pinnacle Mountain, nearby in Table Rock State Park, is the highest peak solely in South Carolina.
Okay.
Sassafras Mountain is actually in North and South Carolina. But
that's where I got caught up.
That's right. But the summit is in South Carolina. Hogback Mountain is in Greenville County, as is Caesar's Head.
Okay. Definitely some great places to go exploring in these cooler months. And check out that sweet foliage. Awesome. Thank you, Russ, for that.
You are welcome.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live stream on scetv.org. Listen to our coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast and more is available on SCETV's super easy to use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at @scledepod, that's at @scleadpod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @scleadpod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scledepod@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Kaylin Park is our social media strategist. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on December 3rd, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Keep ego and eggnog this holiday season.
Sassafras.